Last week, we kicked off a new series about Horizon's core values. Core values are ingrained principles that guide all of a church or an organization's actions. They serve as cultural cornerstones. Core values are inherent and sacrosanct. They can never be compromised or should never be compromised, either for convenience or short-term gain. They're what we're about, and they can't change. They're the source of a church or an organization's distinctiveness, and they must be maintained at all costs. Here at Horizon, we have five core values. We were able to name all five last week, which I was impressed by. Can you name all five? What are Horizon Church's five core values? We talked about being Jesus-centered last week, right? What else? Community-focused, yep. People-driven, what? Sorry. People-driven, okay. Kingdom-minded. Or I think Anthony actually said it last week.
Wait, hold on. I should know. What's our fifth core value?
You
want to
name
Jesus?
Is that
we equip people to live and love like Jesus. Yes. Yes.
You
were all hitting around it. Yeah, you're right on top of it. This month, Horizon turns 6 years old. So that's amazing. A lot of church plants burn out after 5 years, so we made it to year six, so that's good. But after 6 years in, I'm preaching a series about our core values and reflecting on how we've done it, making them a core part of our identity, both as individuals and as a church. And I'm trying to cast vision for how we should be living them out in the future of our church. And this is our second week, and we're looking at our second one, people-driven. And once again, these core values come from the way Jesus operated. So we're going to look at two stories about Jesus here. First in Luke chapter 8, starting in verse 40. Now when Jesus returned, a crowd welcomed him, for they were all expecting him. And then a man named Jairus, a synagogue leader, came and he fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him and she touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. "Who touched me?" Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the people are crowding all around you and pressing against you. Why are you asking this?" But Jesus said, "Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me." And then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. And then he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." And then let's look at Matthew 19, starting in verse 13. Then people brought little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them and pray for them, but the disciples rebuked them. Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me. Do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these." And when he had placed his hands on them, he went on from there. In both of these cases, Jesus set aside the urgency of the crowd, the importance of the ministry for a moment with a person. To Jesus, ministry was people. It wasn't about popularity and crowds. He wasn't worried about reaching the most people. He was concerned with reaching the person right in front of him. And then in the first scenario, someone was literally dying. Like, Jesus was on his way to save someone who was sick and was about to die. It would have been easy for him to say, "Hey, I'm too busy to stop and spend time with this woman." And it was crowded. There wasn't space. He didn't have time. And yet he carved out time and space to meet with this woman. The disciples had every right to push him on to his ministry destination. Like, "Jesus, this kid is really sick. We need to hurry. We don't have time for this. We have places to be, Jesus. We have schedules to keep." But love doesn't follow a schedule. Love makes time for the person right in front of you. A crowd of people were crushing in on Jesus, and he stops in the road to make space and spend a moment with a hurting woman. In the second story, children are brought to Jesus. And like in the modern world, in the West, we're like, "Oh, how sweet, children. Children are so sweet and great." And the disciples, like, what are their problem here? Do they just not like kids? What's going on? The disciples seem to be saying, like, Jesus has more important things to do and more important people to meet with. In first century Israel, children were the lowest social structure in society. They were the lowest members of a household. While they were educated and fed, they had no social importance. They had no social authority. A man would be the head of the house in first century Jewish culture. Then his wife would have authority, and then servants, and then the children. They were to be seen and not heard, and yet Jesus takes time out of his busy and exhausting travel and ministry schedule to spend time with people who didn't matter to the big scheme of things. Children, people who couldn't fund him or support him or give him more social clout. He loved people who couldn't do anything for him, people who couldn't elevate him or fund him or even understand his teaching, because Jesus was people-driven. In his eyes, people were not the fuel to drive his ministry. People were his ministry. And so when I started Horizon, I wanted our church to have that same passion for people. And here's how I defined people-driven in my early writings about this core value as I was fleshing out what it meant and what it would look like. I wrote these down. We want people to belong even before they believe. We value people over programs. We think life change happens around tables, not just in services. We believe that church is not a building nor an event. It is people, and the focus should be on people. And we celebrate stories instead of numbers. In 2019, we coined our mission statement as a church. We're going to be about relationships, not religion. And this was an attempt to simplify what we were all about, the unique way we were going about being a church. And this idea stems from this core value of being people-driven rather than program-driven. We think the good news of Jesus moves at the speed of trust, and trust isn't developed in a big gathering. Like, that's not how I'm going to build trust with someone. Is like gathering them in a huge crowd. Trust isn't going to be developed just through lots of teaching. Trust happens relationally as you spend time with people. Because we're people-driven, because we're about relationships, not religion, because we are about people and not programs, that's the reason we have community dinners. Like, I've had people in our church come in before and say, why are you doing that? Like, what's your objective? Like, if small groups assimilate people into the church, then what's the point of a community dinner? Why are you doing this? This doesn't serve any purpose to the bottom line. We do it because we're about not the bottom line. We're about people, not programs, about relationships, not religion. That's the reason we post pictures of us talking after a service, and I always post the same thing. Some of our favorite moments happen after a service, not during it. Because the things that will shape you most in life are not sitting and listening to me give a lecture, but it will be being in relationship with someone who has maybe a little bit more of Jesus than you do, and it sparks interest and passion. That'll change you much more than listening to me talk. I've been convinced that you can attend every Bible study and every church service and still not be changed and transformed by the message of the gospel, but I don't think you can spend close relational time with people who have been transformed by the gospel and not be touched by it. I love Bible studies. I love the Bible. I'm a book nerd. My undergrad is in English and writing. But studying the Bible isn't enough. That's why you can't just be a Christian without community, because change happens with other people. There's a reason you can't have Alcoholics Anonymous by yourself. One of the most successful change organizations in the world is Alcoholics Anonymous. People who have an addiction come in and they find a support network to help them change, and they hear stories of people who have changed, and they see people in the process both before and behind them, and it changes you. It would be ridiculous to say, I'm starting my own solo Alcoholics Anonymous, because it wouldn't work. And yet some of us believe that we can become like Jesus without a community, and we can't. If you want to change someone's mind, don't argue facts with them. Don't send them lectures. Find a friend living out a lifestyle different from theirs, and it will change their mind. Daryl Davis is a blues musician. I think we have a picture of him up here. He has a really interesting hobby. For the past 30 years, Davis has spent time befriending members of the Ku Klux Klan. He says, once the friendship blossoms, the Klansmen realize that their hate is misguided. Since Davis started talking with Klan members, he says 200 Klansmen have given up their robes. If you're not familiar with the Ku Klux Klan, they're a white supremacist group who persecuted and even killed black people throughout American history. David says, if you spend 5 minutes with your worst enemy, it doesn't have to be about race, it could be about anything, you will find that you both have something in common. As you build upon those commonalities, you form a relationship. And as you build upon that relationship, you form a friendship. And that's what happens. I didn't convert anyone. They saw the light through our friendship and converted themselves. That's the power of being people-driven. We're living in a unique moment in American Christianity. We've seen the rise of massive mega churches with tens of thousands of members in the last 40 years, but we've also seen the collapse of mega church after mega church as scandals plagued the largest churches in the land. We had the Catholic priest sex abuse scandal, there was Mars Hills Church that collapsed, and now Hillsong has scandals, and Willow Creek, and the list goes on and on. Some studies now show that in America, lawyers and used car salesmen are more respected in our culture than pastors or priests. So when I meet people for the first time, I don't say I'm a pastor. I say, I work at an art center. And they're like, that's cool. And then after they get to know me a little bit, I admit that I'm also a pastor on the side. It usually goes over better. This isn't a criticism of our culture, though, that we don't respect pastors and priests anymore. I think it's a criticism of the toxic narcissism that has plagued our pulpits and made churches all about using people to advance the fame of a charismatic individual at the head of a bloated organization. Scott McKnight, who's a New Testament scholar and seminary professor and was a member of Willow Creek, which was, if you don't know, is a massive megachurch in the Chicago area, tens of thousands of members, and then a bunch of stuff came out about their senior pastor and the whole church fell apart. He wrote a book called A Church Called Tov. Tov is a Jewish word, and it means good in its simplest form, but it literally means good from which more and more blessing and abundance and goodness can flow. He argues that that's what the church should be, and the American church isn't. He argues that culture has turned its back on church because not because they have moved away from Jesus. He argues that culture has turned its back on church because the church has moved away from Jesus, away from his vision of being people-driven. We've become obsessed with growth and size and huge budgets and massive agendas because of pastors' raging egos. To quote Mark Driscoll, who ran Mars Hills Church, the fastest growing church in the world for several years before it collapsed in a scandal and no longer exists, here's what he said when the church was at its peak. We're doing big, important work, and it doesn't matter how many people you have to run over to keep this bus moving forward. That cannot be Horizon's motto. If we are people-driven, it will not be our motto. In the last 20 years, church organizations have become too important, and people have become too expendable. Is it any wonder that people don't want to come to church? No one wants to come to a place that wants to use them, abuse them, and discard them when they can no longer get anything from them. For a long time, evangelical churches have argued that they are good even if they treat people badly, because ultimately, they're like, we tell people about heaven so they can avoid hell. And that thinking has excused all kinds of abuse and all kinds of efforts to hide abuse because we have said telling someone about heaven is the ultimate good and therefore the ends justify the means. We must protect our organization. We must protect our leader. Our means are our message. If we do not love people like Jesus did, we are not preaching the good news, the gospel of Jesus the Christ. And I knew when I wanted to start a church, if I was going to start a church, I wanted it to be different than the churches I had experiences with. I had experiences in my past that really compelled me to want to do things differently. I served as an associate pastor of a church of about 300 people in Tennessee before I moved up here. I think we have a picture of me. They made me wear a suit a lot. Look how uncomfortable I look. I hate suits. Hate them. This church I came from had dozens and dozens of programs, which required 150-plus volunteers each year to pull off. The senior pastor once told me, because he was kind of like mentoring me, helping me become eventually a senior pastor of my own, and so a lot of things I had to unlearn that he taught me. But here's what he said to me. The secret to being a good pastor is figuring out how to get people to do something for free. That's what he said a good pastor was. Learning how to manipulate people to serve, to keep the engines of ministry grinding so people came and gave and paid your salary. He said that's what made a good pastor. That vision of church made me sick. It felt cheap and small. It felt dirty. It did not feel like Jesus. When people got tired or sick in that church or wore out, we badgered them into serving longer so everything could keep going. When numbers declined, we would start more ministries because some new ministry might bring in more people, but each new ministry required more volunteers or more hours from the faithful volunteers who already did too much. And so I knew when I started church, I wanted to do things differently. I wanted people to have freedom in their schedules to rest and Sabbath, to know their neighbors and serve them, to share meals with people. I wanted people to not be at church every night of the week. I wanted people to not have to sacrifice their sanity for the good of an organization and be told that God was unhappy with them if they didn't. This is why when you miss a Sunday and you tell me, oh, I'm so sorry I missed a Sunday, and I'm like, it does not bother me. Life is busy and crazy and schedules are hectic. I'm not expecting you to show up at everything. I'm not worried about perfect attendance and patting my ego about how many people I can gather in a room. This is why I tell people, if you can only come to a Sunday morning or you can come to a community dinner, go to a community dinner, because sitting in a crowd will never change you like being known around a table. And I think our culture has shifted. Demographics tell us millennials and Gen Z are distrustful of organizations. I know that many times I feel that in my own heart. Like, I'm like, this big organization is watching out for itself, not watching out for me. Gen Z and millennials would rather believe a peer with no evidence or education who posts a TikTok video than an authority who represents a massive organization or institution. We won't reach people by saying, this is what the church teaches and has taught for 2,000 years. They'll say, well, Billy on TikTok has 1 million followers, and he said this. We won't reach people by saying, this is what the Bible says. That's not enough to just leave it and say, well, the Bible says. They're like, I don't respect the Bible. Sally on TikTok says this. We will reach people by sharing meals and listening to their stories and telling our stories and building relationships with people. Authenticity is the apologetic of our day. People want to meet real people being honest about their doubts, their beliefs, and their hopes. They don't want to be sold some line. They don't want to be roped into some pyramid scheme called a church. They want something that is compelling and will change them when they meet people who are real and open and honest and share their lives. I believe that meetings don't change people's minds and services don't change people's minds. I believe that meals, relationships, opening your home and your life changes people's heart and mind. Opening your home to people who don't look like you or vote like you or believe like you changes them. It lowers barriers between you and them and between them and Jesus, and that's why we're people driven. So with each of these, we're kind of evaluating where we are over the last 6 years and what we should do moving forward. So how are we doing with this one? This is something I want you to take time and think about. How are you doing? How are we doing as a church? I'm going to tell you right now, I'm an introvert and I'm very socially awkward. Most of you know me at this point. You know that's the case. Being relationally focused, being people driven does not come easily to me. I have very low EQ. My emotional intelligence is very low, and I am naturally very task-oriented. If you gave me an option of doing a hard, laborious task or talking to people, I would do the hard, laborious task because it's hard for me to talk to people. I feel uncomfortable, and I will spend the next week thinking about that conversation and critiquing everything that I did wrong in that conversation, and you go, you're a psychopath, and my wife says, yes, yes, he is. I mean, that's the way I am. I have to discipline myself to practice the spiritual act of hospitality. Now, Darby helps me a lot with that because she's an extrovert. She's a lot more socially normal than I am. But this is a core value that I desperately believe in, but it does not come naturally to me. I have to work hard at it, and you probably have stories of times where you think, Alex, you were not very people-driven in this situation, or you did not put relationships over religion in this situation. I'm a work in progress, and I have to work at it, and I fail at it many times. It does not come naturally to me, but I think it is worth it. And some weeks, I don't want to go to community dinner. I'm always glad that I went afterwards, but some weeks I'm like, I just want to sit on a couch and read something or write something or play a board game or like not be around people. Not because those things aren't good, but because sometimes I'm just peopled out. And so this is one I really got to work on. I feel like I do okay at this core value, but not great. I have to work hard and stay disciplined because it would be easy for me to plug away at tasks and forget the tasks that people forget the people that I'm supposed to be doing tasks for. I think a good question for all of us to ask is, am I doing things for people or am I using people for things? And that's an easy question to ask. It's a hard question to get honest and really look at your motivation about why you're doing some things. I feel like I really drove this core value home in the early years of our church, and then COVID happened. Remember that? We were all locked in our homes, and suddenly everything was virtual. All I had was tasks. It was very hard to keep relationships healthy and strong. And when we returned, we had to be cautious and vaccinated. Gathering was messy. Somebody would get sick, and all of a sudden it was like, shut down all gatherings. You can't have meals together. You know, we got to be careful. I feel like we've been slowly recapturing the vision of this core value over the last few years. So I want us together as a church to think about, what does it mean to be people-driven? Is there something that we do that we should do differently if we were people-driven? Is there something that we don't do that we should start because we should be people-driven? What does it look like to see the people around us as the ministry God has called us to? The people we live next door to is the ministry. Ministry is not what you do in church. Ministry is how you express the love of God to the people he has geographically placed around you. The people you work with, the people you live next door to, the people you interact with every week. What would it look like for Horizon to not only be people-driven in here, how we treat each other, but to be people-driven wherever we go, to see everyone we meet as someone made in the image of God? So, 6 years in, Horizon must continue to be people-driven. That happens when I take radical steps as your leader to do what is best for individuals, even when it costs our organization as a whole. But it also happens when you value the relational aspects of our church more than the religious ones. When we put emphasis and focus on the relational, not just the religious tasks. And that happens not just in here. It happens when everywhere we go, we see the people we encounter as our ministry, our unique divine assignment from God to share the love of Jesus with them. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, thank you that you have helped Horizon survive 6 years. That's incredible. But Lord, let us not lose sight of the things that have made us unique. Let us not lose sight of being people-driven. Forgive me for so often being task-oriented that I forget the people that I'm supposed to be doing tasks for. Lord, help me. You know it's not easy for me to be people-driven, but I desperately want it because I don't want to be a church that gets so obsessed with other things that we forget that it's all about people. The church is not a building. It's not an event. It's people. Help me to love your people well. And help us to love the people we encounter every day. Help us to see them with your eyes.